The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
On December 18, 1979, another letter arrived. It gave instructions on the quantity and denominations of the ransom fee, 2 million in German Deutschmarks, 2 million in Swiss francs, and 1 million in Irish pounds, all of which should be packed into one leather case, along with a diplomatic passport. It then demanded the white Mini 1000 be used for the drop-off. Again, they asked for an ad to be placed in the Irish Times on the 22nd of December, stating Tom Smith has read your message and has agreed to your proposals. This is when the guards began to shake things up a little. The ad instead read Tom Smith has read your message, but encounters difficulty. Discussion is necessary.
I never heard about it. I would imagine with that letter surfaced in the Department of Agriculture, was it? Mm. The guards would always take them serious because they knew that the paramilitary and subversive organisations were always seeking sums of money.
The voice of former Taoiseach Bertie Ahern in a clip from Ransom 79. It's a new documentary looking at an extraordinary story that had remained a secret for 40 years. The documentary also tells the story of the determination of journalist Charlie Bird to break what would be his final story before his death in March of this year. The documentary will be released in Irish cinemas tomorrow. Joining me now to tell us more is Claire Mould, wife of the late Charlie Bird, and producer John Keller. Good morning and welcome.
Morning.
How did this story come about?
How did it come about? Well, Charlie used to do a podcast series for the Senior Times, and Willie McGee, who was head of the fraud squad in the 70s and 80s, had come to Charlie and said, I've got this brilliant story. It's never been told before. 40 years ago, this happened. And Charlie did a podcast about Ransom 79 and said, I need to make this into a documentary. So John Kelleher, he said, I'm going to get on to John and let's see what we can do about this.
Ransom 79. Therefore, it was set in 1979, this story. So
extraordinarily, Pat, it actually kicked off in the very week that Lord Mountbatten was murdered and that the 18 British soldiers were blown to pieces.
An extraordinary day. Some of us can remember where we were on that day when the news broke that Mountbatten had been killed and then the soldiers ambushed.
And a letter arrived that the particular day, the 29th of August, 1979, which said, it's the Department of Agriculture, Dear Minister, if the Irish government does not pay us £5 million, we will unleash the deadly foot and mouth virus in this country.
Now, 5 million, it's a lot now. It was a hell of a lot then.
I think it's 30 million now.
30 million, you were saying, Is it worth about 30 million?
So these people wanted 30 million in exchange for not infecting the national herd with foot and mouth.
Foot and mouth.
So, didn't know who they were.
The guards and the civil servants went into immediate kind of action and they set up an operations group. And of course, it could have been a hoax. It could have been a criminal gang. It was a criminal gang, as it turned out. It could have been paramilitaries. It could have been Republicans, whatever.
But the extraordinary thing was that you can chronicle all of this because you reproduce the letters that were received by the department and then the ads placed in the Irish Times in response to the demands of the extortionists, and those are in the record of the Irish Times.
Exactly, and the director, Colm Quinn, has captured all of that and turned it into basically a thriller.
It's like a Jean Le Carré, we were saying. No, it's brilliant. It is a thriller.
It's even more than a thriller because, as you know, Pat, shortly before we started on it, Charlie had got the news of his motor durone. And we thought, well, that's it. We'll park it. It's not going to happen. But in fact, he was determined.
I know he was totally determined to do it. Because at the time, John, you were filming Loud and Clear. So you kind of
another
Charlie Doc. It was his doc, you know, kind of chronicling his life and dealing with M&D. But he, like a dog with a bone, Charlie was determined that this would be made into a documentary.
So he hooked up with somebody else.
Lovely Colin Murphy, he did. So, John, you kind of put the two of them together because we knew Charlie would have to interview people and he'd have to use his voice app, but he obviously needed somebody who could also speak. So between the two of them, they were absolutely fantastic together.
For people of a certain generation, they kind of Woodward and Burns.
That's what I was saying. As I looked at the movie, I thought that about them. Here we are, two different talents coming to bear on this particular
story. They were two very different talents in a way, and yet great friends as they were also. Colin would be, you know, both a journalist and a dramatist, a playwright. Charlie would be like a perfect, super investigative journalist, legendary.
Dog with the bone.
No, and he'd met Colin. It's like Colin wrote A Day in May, which was Charlie's, you know, book that they turned into a play. So the two of them had met before and they were amazing together. They really were. They worked so well together, and Colin had such love and sensitivity towards Charlie. He really did. You know, there's so many lovely scenes, you know, throughout the feature.
Now, you're talking about something that happened 45 years ago in 1979. It began. The resolution didn't happen until into 1980, and we'll talk about that resolution. As much as you want to give away of the plot.
Don't give anything
of
away.
Of the story. But the people politically who were involved are still around today, still living and still with us. Ray McSharry was Minister for Agriculture.
Yeah.
And it was to his department that the demand was made.
Yeah, it was indeed. And the interview we have at Ray is brilliant. I know. And, you know, as we say, we don't want to give everything away, but he kind of set it up. So he knew that this was going to have to be set up. And we started with Ray then, I think.
Yes, and we also have Gerry Collins, Minister for Justice, with Bertie, who at the time was Chief Whip, and obviously we went on to other things. And we've Mairead McGuinness, although she wasn't involved in this, but she was, you know, a young agriculture journalist at the time. And she's extremely good on the devastation that foot and mouth would cause to the agricultural economy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, the back and forth between officials in the department, it's amazing how they kept the lid on all of this, because the Taoiseach didn't know.
Yeah, it's extraordinary. Actually, Ray McSharry is really good on this. You know, he said the fewer that know, the better. And they kept it really, as you say, they kept
under wraps,
really tight.
I mean, you know yourself that today, if you said it to one member of the cabinet...
Oh, it'd just spread everywhere.
Everyone. It'd be leaked in the papers.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone would know. Yeah.
Now, as the story unfolded, were they hopeful they would actually get to a resolution, that they'd finally be able to identify the people who were behind this extortion?
They had their suspicions as to who they were, and they were watching certain people. But it was a cat and mouse game that played out over a period of about 6 months. I think there were six letters in all, a couple of phone calls, you know, and the guards were desperately trying to find, you know, who are these guys? And the gang were obviously, you know, watching every move that the guards were making. And it all culminates, we won't give any spoilers, but it all culminates in a tremendous hunt.
But we know there was a criminal gang, and we also know that there was a barrister involved.
Yeah, and the barrister, there's a whole, do you say it was a junior counsel who became a senior counsel, and that's as much as the movie tells us?
Well, we don't know. We can't give anything away. But yes, cat and mouse, we know who was involved.
People who were in the know would probably put two and two together and...
Yeah, they did know.
They might be able to, but we didn't, and for very strong ethical reasons, we didn't. Mm. We don't name the barrister because the evidence, particularly against him, would not be sufficient to justify... Mm. Now, we could have done it, but we chose not to, and that was Charlie's wish.
Can you bring us back to the kind of the political and the general climate in Ireland in 1979. I mean, Gerry Collins, in talking about being Minister for Justice, how anywhere they went, he had to be protected. His wife had to be protected. The family had to be protected. A difficult time.
Bertie says never a Friday went past there wasn't a bank robbery.
Yeah.
It was an extraordinarily difficult time. There was
Bertie said some people, sorry for cutting across, that he's not too sure. He thinks that some ransoms had been paid, but he wasn't. He wasn't 100% sure, but that was what the rumours were.
Yeah, one or two ransoms might have been paid.
Yeah, but, you know, he wasn't given much away.
Well, we had kidnappings, of course.
Yeah, of course.
And whether or not ransoms were paid, still an open question. So for Charlie, as he reached the culmination of the story, he was also reaching the end of his life. And it's very poignant, the movie, and the relationship, obviously, yours with Charlie is well known and very well documented.
Yeah. It was very hard for him, Pat. You know, the documentary was something that he says, you know, kept him alive. But I think, you know, as the documentary you know, it was a year and a half, I think, John, we were filming it. Charlie did get very fatigued. I mean, M&D was still, you know, was slowly just making Charlie more and more fatigued. It was quite difficult at times to get him to some of the shoots.
At one point in the movie, and it's not a spoiler to say this, you stop an interview that's going on and say, Bird is bunched more or less.
Yeah.
No, he can do no more.
Yeah. We kind of, like, because I work in TV, I understood what John and what Colin, the director, needed. So it was easy to try and maneuver Bird in and out of what they needed. But to be honest, I think, John, by the end of it, he was just so fatigued that, you know, we limited the time that we were filming with Charlie. Yeah. But like a dog with a bone, he wanted to finish the doc. So, no, a lot of respect for Charlie, but I think it was hard. I think it was hard for him at the end. You don't think so, John?
I do. But he was, as Claire says, he was absolutely determined to see it through. And in fact, one of the last things that he ever wrote was a note to his two great friends, Joe O'Brien and Ray Burke. Oh, yeah. I mean, this is in the hospice. And as they were leaving, saying goodbye effectively for the last time, and he held out this, he scribbled literally two words, the date of the premiere,
I know.
And he possibly thought...
No, myself and Charlie did sit down when he was in the hospice and we went through who he'd like to go to the premiere. Like, he always, his head was always going around and around. The premiere was on and,
Did he get to see the final cut?
No.
Not the final cut, but
he saw the rough cut.
He liked that a lot.
Yeah, he didn't get to see it.
It's an extraordinary film because it tells the two stories in parallel.
Yeah.
It's the big story of Ransom 79, which is kept secret for 40 years, and then the parallel story of Charlie.
Yeah, I know. I know he would have loved the doc, but it was very hard, Pat. I don't know, like anybody who was terminally ill, you know, I always say to John, you have the public bird and then you have the home bird. And, you know, Charlie at home, it was difficult trying to, you know, keep him, you know, keep the head above water, you know, it's all that mental kind of fatigue, the physical fatigue.
Charlie would make the effort in public.
Yeah.
His public persona.
Yeah.
But at home, when he can let his guard down. And
he would get into dark times for poor Bird. Like it was really difficult. M&D is known as the 1,000-day disease. And Charlie was diagnosed 3 years ago and he died within 3 years of being diagnosed. And, you know, you never think that someone is going to move on, you know, because I know when Charlie died, Orla Hardiman has this nurse called Bernie Corr, who is her right-hand lady, and she rang me and said, the clinic we used to go to on a Thursday for M&D, the patients there were absolutely distraught when they heard Charlie had died, because in their world, they always said he was like a beacon of hope, and they never thought he would. And I know it sounds ridiculous. I mean, he was as fragile as anybody else. You know, he had M&D and it was no different than anybody else's. So, yeah, it was a very kind of, it just was very moving. When Bernie rang me, I just thought, God, that's so dreadful for all the other patients who always thought Charlie would never pass, you know.
Yeah, but for you, Claire, I mean, you were heroic in all of this.
Yeah, well, I don't know if it was heroic, but, you know, you do anything for the person you love. But it was very hard, Pat, you know. It was very hard for me to see Bird suffer so much. But he was so amazing out in the public. You know, he would do anything. Like, Climate Charlie kind of was the thing that kind of springboarded him into doing lots of charity work, you know, working for the Samaritans, Pieta, the hospice. He just suddenly went, I want to extend the hand of friendship to everyone. And it didn't matter if he didn't like you. He still wanted to help you. And I had to keep up with him and make sure that he could go and do all these things. But yeah, it was very hard. But I'm totally in awe of Charlie. I think he was amazing. You know, I really do. Not just saying that because I'm his wife, but, you know, just to see how hard he worked and how difficult it was at home, you know, struggling with M&D, you know.
And for you now, life without Charlie?
Oh, it's a bit dreadful, to be honest. But, you know, you have to, like, I know it sounds dreadful, you have to get on with it. But yeah, it is. No, it's very sad. At home, you know, in the evenings when I've got Tiger there, thank God.
He's in the corner of the studio.
We have the chats. Myself and I sometimes call him Bird. I forget he's not. But no, it is.
As soon as you said his name, his head lifted up off the floor there to have
Tiger
a look at us.
Great, he is. He's great. But we've got loads of photos of Charlie around the house. So wherever I go, there he is, looking down at me.
The film then is getting a cinematic release.
It is.
40 cinemas from Friday.
40 cinemas.
Around the country.
All around the country.
Yeah.
Which is great. And it's called Ransom 79. Since the story's out there now, any postscripts arise since, you know, anyone stand up and say, I knew all about that? Or
I got a call the other day from someone that you know and that I know and will not name him, but he'd be a very political person who claimed that there was a good likelihood of a certain person that he mentioned, who I vaguely remembered, was in that gang. And I think there'll be a fair bit of that. Like, you know, we in the GPO in 1916, you know, the gang, which numbered about four or five, will suddenly, you know, swell to about 50, I'd say, before the cinema release is over.
One of the things that sticks with me is a key vehicle in all of this is a Mini. And when you look at the size of the Minis.
I know.
The tiny, parked outside the Gresham. When could you park outside the Gresham Hotel?
My first car was a Mini. As was mine. Than that.
Oh, I think the Minis look great. It just adds, you know, a bit of humour, you know, when you see the Minis all lined up. They're brilliant.
Anyway, it is a great yarn. Well told, John.
Well told by Colm Quinn, the director. Yeah. It's an uncanny ability that he has to get to the heart of a story. And this is two stories. And the way he fuses them into one, the story of a thriller, if you like, an investigation, but a legendary journalist doing what he just was born to do. Yeah, I'm so proud of Charlie, too, because I did the first documentary, I think, that Charlie ever made 50 years ago. And this is to be his last documentary.
To do the first and the last.
Yeah. 50 years apart.
Well, Ransom 79, it is called, in over 40 cinemas nationwide, so there will be one near you. It'll bring a tear to your eye. It's brilliantly told. It's a great yarn. And thank you both very much for joining us. Claire Mould, wife of the late Charlie Bird, and the producer of Ransom 79, John Keller. Thank you both for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.